From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The Catholic Church in China remains very much in the news this week as controversy surrounds the Vatican effort to find a diplomatic breakthrough with the communist government. Religious liberty and human rights advocates are concerned over the proposed deal. On Register Radio, we find out why when we talk to Register contributor Reggie Littlejohn. And then we turn to Lent. It begins in a matter of days. Father Roger Landry joins us to help prepare for the season the Church intends to be our annual spiritual boot camp. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host for Register Radio, and I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen, my co-host. And this week...
Good morning.
Good morning, Matthew. This week, Catholics are understandably concerned about what is happening in China, and questions swirl around the Vatican's accord that has been discussed and whether it will give too much to the communists of China. This accord affects more than 12 million Catholics in China, some worshiping in the official state recognized by the state-recognized church, and others worshiping in an underground church that has been persecuted for its loyalty to the Pope.
That's right, Jeanette. The situation there is doubly complicated because we have possible diplomatic implications for the Holy See's relationship with Taiwan. And then there's the ongoing question about religious liberty, especially with new laws just imposed on February 1st by the Beijing government. But there's a lot to talk about. And to discuss all of that, of course, is Reggie Littlejohn. Reggie, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And of course, Reggie is the president of Women's Rights Without Frontiers. It's a women's rights group focused on stopping a forced abortion and sterilization in China. And first, Reggie, I wanted to talk about how you got involved in this work, recognizing that women in China are really under great pressure and duress.
Well, that's a good question. I'm an attorney. I'm trained as a complex commercial and intellectual property litigator. And on a pro bono basis, I represented Chinese refugees in their cases for political asylum. This was in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And my first client was someone who had been forcibly sterilized under the one-child policy, meaning they dragged her out of her home, strapped her down to a table, cut her open, and tied her tubes with no anesthesia. And she ended up with a massive infection and lost her entire health for the rest of her life. And I was appalled. I mean, I had heard that China had a one-child policy, but I didn't stop to think of how it was enforced. And because I had suffered my own miscarriages, the fact that these women were being forcibly aborted hit me on a visceral level. I think it might not have otherwise. And I left the practice of law and devoted all the skills that I gained as a litigation attorney to advocating on behalf of the women and the babies of China.
Wow. So now we are in a very interesting moment as Catholics watching the church, the Catholic Church, the Vatican, try to reach an accord with the communist government, communist atheist government of China. And you must have a particular picture of what Chinese Catholics are experiencing on the ground. What's that picture?
Well, historically, the Chinese underground church has shed its blood and has been tortured, jailed for its loyalty to Rome. And most recently, in the last couple years, the Chinese government, which the Religious Affairs Bureau is the one that governs religion, has been tearing down crosses. They have torn down 2,000 crosses over the last several years, basically decapitating churches, both Catholic and Protestant. And over the last couple of months, they completely demolished one Catholic church and one Protestant church. And one of the saddest stories I've seen is of a woman who was a pastor's wife in April of 2016 who was standing in front of a bulldozer trying to protect their church and was run over by the bulldozer and killed.
Gosh. Oh.
So, you know, the Chinese Christians, Catholic and Protestant, are just heroic in their faith. And what people need to understand is that in the official church, basically the Religious Affairs Bureau calls the shots, and they are the ones that are the head of the church, whereas the loyal Catholics regard the Pope as being the head of the church, and the Chinese government can't stand anyone having loyalty to somebody other than themselves, especially not a foreign power. So they've been heavily persecuted.
And of course, right now, what we're looking at in this accord is the possibility of an agreement with the Chinese government on the part of the Vatican on how to accept bishops who are chosen in part by the Chinese government and then confirmed by the Pope. And there are real questions as to whether or not this will give China's government too much control over the appointment of bishops. And this has been a controversy for a long time, and we're hearing that there may be an agreement later in March. Is that what you're hearing, and what are you hearing about the concerns over this?
Yes, that is what I'm hearing, and the concern is that you're correct that what has happened historically is that the Religious Affairs Bureau will appoint bishops without a consultation of the Pope, and typically what happens is that those bishops get excommunicated because they have accepted an ordination that has not been from the Holy See. But then some of those bishops have come and apologized and basically repented of it, and then they have been accepted mm-hmm. by the Pope, and they've been brought in. The two bishops right now that are in question were appointed by the Religious Affairs Bureau, by the Chinese government, and two legitimate bishops have been asked to step aside to make way for these other bishops. And to my knowledge, one of whom has been excommunicated, have not repented, and are just, one of them is a member of the Chinese government, one of the bureaus of the Chinese government. So there is a big concern that under those circumstances, where they have not been sort of normalized by the church, that yes, that the Vatican is giving up too much to the Chinese government.
Well, Reggie, you've enumerated a number of significant issues that have been of concern for a long time, including China's one-child policy, two-child policy. Now, we have, as you note, the forced abortions. We have the limitations on religious freedoms. Recent comments seem to have complicated the situation because Bishop Marcelo Sanchez Sorondo, a chancellor of no less than the Pontifical Academy of Sciences and the Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences, had very favorable things to say about China's communist leaders. He said to the Vatican Insider that at this moment, those who best realize the social doctrine of the church are the Chinese. And I know you've just written a piece, actually looking very closely at these comments. What's your reaction to his statement?
I am completely baffled and dismayed by his statement. I go through in this piece that you just put up online every part of his statement and show how it's false. I mean, I don't see how he can say that the Chinese are the best ones in terms of Catholic social doctrine, when the basis of Catholic social doctrine is a belief in God, and the Chinese are officially atheistic. Also, they are persecuting Christians heavily, as we have just outlined. So I don't see how. Actually, in some areas, they're putting up surveillance cameras in churches to protect against terrorism. You know, how is regarding churches as being potential terrorist cells in line with Catholic social doctrine? The Chinese government has forcibly aborted hundreds of millions of women, forcibly sterilized hundreds of millions of women. How is that a great example of Chinese of Catholic social doctrine? And you can go on. I mean, we can talk about his comments saying that their system of work is just great, and ignoring the entire system of forced labor, which provides a lot of our artificially cheap products. He talks about how there aren't any shanty towns in China, and he ignores the fact that there are at least 82 million Chinese who are living on less than a dollar a day. That's a statistic from, I think, 2014. But nevertheless, a dollar a day, 82 million, how many are living on $2 a day or $3 a day? There's a lot of poverty in China. And in fact, so much so that there's a huge problem with parents abandoning their children from the countryside to go and make money to support them in the cities. So there's this enormous population of abandoned children. There was a very sad story a couple of years ago, four abandoned children committing suicide together, drinking pesticides because they were so upset about both of their parents leaving them because they were too poor to support them. They had to go to the town. So, I mean, we can talk about other things, environmental issues. He says that, you know, that the environment is really important to China. And, you know, what about the fact that there's reports that China's air pollution has reached levels at times at which planes cannot land in China, that lung cancer is on the rise, and that our own pollution, like in California, pollution comes over from China. So the United States is doing all these things to try to lower our emissions, and yet there's a report that 29% of San Francisco's air pollution comes from China.
Wow.
So whatever way you look at it, his statement that that China is exemplary in upholding Catholic social doctrine is not based in fact whatsoever.
And that's right. And the name of Reggie's commentary at ncregister.com is "Praise of China's Adherence to Catholic Social Doctrine Flies in the Face of Facts." And as you can hear, there really are some concerning statements by Bishop Sirondo. And we invite you to go to NC Register and take a look at those. It's very important for the Register to get the information out about China. We have got many reports on what's happening with this Vatican and China accord, and we invite you to follow it closely. Peter Jesser Smith has written about it. Of course, Reggie Littlejohn and CNA, Catholic News Agency, is also following this situation very closely. But Reggie, before we let you go, please let our listeners know where they can find out more information about your organization.
Oh, thank you for asking. So we're called Women's Rights Without Frontiers, and you can go onto our website, womensrightswithoutfrontiers.org, and we have a Save a Girl campaign that is actually saving baby girls from sex selective abortion and abandonment in China. You can find out more about that on the website.
Thank you so much for joining us, Reggie. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
When we come back, Matthew and I will talk with Father Roger Landry about how to make Lent truly rewarding. This is Register Radio on EWTN.
Father Wade Menezes talks about the National Catholic Register.
As the National Catholic Register celebrates its 90th anniversary, I think that says a lot about the publication. It works. It's solidly Catholic. It presents the teachings of the Church, unabashedly so, and also guides its readers to be even more solidly Catholic themselves. One of the major effects that I think the Register has on its readers is that it elevates the intellect. Whether it be a faith item or a news item, it presents the news and the faith item in a very balanced way. One thing that the Register can never be accused of is being too far left or too far right. It is solidly Catholic, right in line with the Chair of Peter. And I think that says a lot about the Register.
For a 6-issue free trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy some of our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, and I am ready to talk about Lent. I am not prepared yet for Lent, and it starts very soon. And so I've invited Father Roger Landry to join us to talk about Lent. Welcome, Father Roger.
Good to be with you, Jeanette, and with all your listeners.
Thank you. Well, Father Roger Landry is a priest of the Diocese of Fall River, Massachusetts, who works now for the Holy See's Permanent Observer Mission to the United Nations. And Father Roger, you have recently written an article for the Register, a commentary that helps people prepare for Lent. Let's talk about what some of the key tips are for preparing for Lent. First off, one of the things you say is that Lent should not be something for sissies. Elaborate on that.
Many of the times the Lenten commitments that we make are very easy to accomplish and aren't really going to accomplish all that much in us at the same time. For example, Matthew Kelly has made famous the whole phrase that we got to give up more than chocolate for
right.
Lent.
Mm-hmm.
The whole purpose of Lent is going back to the basics of our faith, learning to unite our entire life to the Lord, remembering that he calls us to be saints and to become a saint means to try to live faith, hope, and love, not just adequately and get a D plus on it,
mm-hmm.
but in a heroic way and strive with God's assistance to get an A in the most important thing of why we're alive. And so our Lenten commitments and promises need to keep that goal in mind. And if we're just giving up potato chips, for example, mm-hmm. I don't think that that's exactly what made the Blessed Virgin Mother holy.
That's right.
It's not what's made the saints holy. And so I challenge people in general that when we are looking at prayer, fasting, and almsgiving, the three that Jesus always mentions at the Gospel on Ash Wednesday, we need to be bold in the promises that we make. This year's coincidence of Ash Wednesday with Valentine's Day helps us to see, frankly, and I think it's a positive thing, not a negative, helps us to see what passion we're bringing or lack thereof to these practices. For example, couples who are in love talk to each other, and that's what we're called to do in prayer. Couples who are in love really sacrifice for each other. That's what we're called to do in our almsgiving for the Lord and others. Those who are in love are willing, they hunger for each other in a certain sense, and our fasting is meant to help us to hunger for what God hungers, which is really that we care about each other as beloved neighbors and as good Samaritans one to each other. And so St. Valentine's Day is a wonderful opportunity for us to focus on living our Lenten commitments with the passion with which young men and young women in love live their relationship.
You know, Father Landry, as I was proofing your column before we put it into the print edition of the Register and, of course, online now, I was really struck because it was a week ago at least, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I do need to start thinking about Lent. It's coming up pretty quickly. And of course, here we are just a few days before Lent, and I'm still saying, oh my goodness, I need to think more about Lent. But what struck me is that you presented this as us needing to have a plan. Why? Because this is essentially us getting ready to be able to confront temptation. Like Jesus did in the desert, to be able to confront the devil when he presents himself to us in various temptations. And it's based on a book that was published February 1st by Pauline Books and Media, Plan of Life. And you wrote this book for the same purpose as you wrote the column, which is to help us prepare. So tell us a little bit more about this plan of life.
So Jesus said to Peter on Holy Thursday night, when Peter said, Lord, I'll never betray you, even if I need to die for you, and then went out and betrayed, even knowing, betrayed him by confessing that he didn't even know who he was, to stay warm by a fire and stay close to Jesus when the trial was occurring. And Jesus said to Peter, Peter, the spirit's willing, but the flesh is weak.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the times we have very good and holy desires, but do we act on those desires? And, you know, there's a huge difference between a good wish and a resolution. A good wish is, for example, I want to lose weight. A good resolution is I'm not going to have food between meals. I'm not going to have high fructose corn syrup
mm-hmm.
and all types of high-calorie sodas or whatever else. A resolution, a plan, is what takes that good wish and makes it practical. And so we need that for Lent. Jesus gives us the outline of a plan in terms of prayer, fasting, and almsgiving, but we need to be concrete about what that means. And not just in Lent. I wrote this book, Plan of Life, to help us with the big picture of where we're going in life and whether we're at a practical level walking more and more together with the Lord or whether we're walking more and more apart from him. We live, as you know, Jeanette, in a increasingly secularized age. And as Pope Benedict used to talk about secularism, he said, secularism is living as if God were not a given, living as if God doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so the real temptation is to make our life of faith something that we do first thing in the morning with a few prayers at the end of the day, and something we take out with our best clothes on Sunday when we go to church. But what the Lord's asking of us is that we unite our entire existence with Him. So a plan of life is a spiritual game plan, a series of practices that can help us from the time we get up until the time we have our last thought going to bed to unite the various parts of our life, our work, our family, our prayer, more and more toward the Lord, so that everything we do is one application or another of the Lord's command to pray always, to unite yourself with me always, because He is God with us. And if we're living a truly Christian life, we're going to seek to be with Him.
I want to look a little bit deeper at this plan of life through the lens of Lent. And the name of your column at ncregister.com is Formulating a Plan of Life for Lent and Beyond by Father Roger Landry. And you go into great detail about how to formulate a plan of life during Lent with the prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. And you actually give some great, I think, just examples of things that can help us go a little bit further than, just the nighttime prayers. Can you give us some of those key examples, beginning with prayer, for example?
Sure. With prayer, if we're going to make a plan, it needs to be concrete, it needs to be doable, and it also needs to challenge us, really, to change some of the ways that we look at our time. And so one of the things that's very important during Lent is that we unite ourselves to what Christ has accomplished for us on Calvary. It tells us in St. Luke's Gospel, it's really the pivot of St. Luke's Gospel in Luke 9:51, that Jesus set his face resolutely to Jerusalem, and that's what we do in Lent. And so praying the Stations of the Cross is key. To make some fixed time for what the Church calls mental prayer each day, whether it's 5 minutes, 15, 30, or an hour, depending upon what our schedule is, that we make a concrete fixed amount of time and stick to it every day. It can't be too long if there's no chance that we'll be able to keep the resolution. When we start breaking it, we get discouraged and we don't grow.
Right.
But if we were to make 15 minutes a commitment every single day for the period of Lent, over those 15 minutes each day, the Lord's going to be able to do a tremendous amount of good. I also suggest daily Mass for those who can make it. If they can't get to daily Mass because of work or family obligation, to try to at least pay attention to the readings, for example, with Magnificat or many of the apps that we have on our smartphone, but to prioritize are placing God first in our life. And again, if I can go back to Valentine's Day, which is when Ash Wednesday will occur, people who love each other spend time with each other. It's not just a duty to fulfill, but it's a great gift. And so it begins there by listening to what the Lord wants to say in order to guide us each day, and then to be able to follow Him along that path that He gives us in small little prayerful indications.
I just love
fasting
how...
second.
I just love how practical. I was just going to say, I love how practical your advice is, because you do encourage us to push ourselves, to stretch ourselves, but don't take on something that you're not going to be able to keep. It's a very realistic goal, and you were getting ready to go towards fasting, and sometimes, you know, we are daunted by this idea of fasting because, hey, we have to work, we need our energy, but you also give us some very practical tips on fasting. How can that be done? And I cut you off, so go ahead. Tell us more about fasting.
So many on fasting either set goals too small or too big. Too small by just, for example, giving up sugar in their coffee. I just don't think that that's adequate to make somebody truly holy. Likewise, some people will overfast, that they're going to try to live something very, very strenuous for 40 straight days. For example, just eating bread or water.
Mm-hmm.
For 40 days, you're going to be robbed of energy. You're probably not going to get enough glucose to do your work past the blood-brain barrier. That's probably going to make you irritable, and it's likely, if you're able to accomplish it, lead you to pride. And so what I recommend is something that I've used a lot in the confessional over the course of years, where people need fasting to gain self-discipline, but if we fast too much, Well, when we fail, often we binge eat afterward. And so one of the ones that's been very successful involves a few little things. Just drink water during Lent, or if you have to drink coffee because you need the caffeine, water it down a little bit. But if you were to do that, you've got several times over the course of the day in which you're saying to your appetite for food or for drink, you're not in control.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in control. I recommend don't have condiments on your food. No ketchup or butter or salt or pepper, salad dressing, things like this. Again, you'll have five or six opportunities over the course of the day to unite yourself to the Lord. You're still going to get nourishment. You're not going to lack energy, but there's going to be a little bit of a thorn in what
right,
you're eating.
Exactly.
And then I generally encourage, to the extent possible, that you not eat between meals and just look to your next meal. You'll get plenty of calories that you need for your work, but every time you eat and you drink, there's going to be a harmonization of your appetite for food with God. And if you can control that appetite, your appetite for adulation and approval, your appetite for sort of your sex appetite, other things can far more easily be self-mastered too.
Now, we've run out of time for the third one, which is almsgiving. But one thing that you say is this almsgiving should be deliberate. It should not be just engaging in random acts of kindness, but really have a game plan for self-sacrifice as we give to others, because we live in such a world of egotism, and so sacrificing needs to be front and central. But Father Landry, I invite our listeners to go to ncregister.com, take a look at your column on the plan for life for Lent and beyond. Thanks for being with us today.
May God help us both this Lent, Jeanette. Thanks.
Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless.
The National Catholic Register is America's most complete Catholic news source, with a comprehensive view of the world from a distinctly Catholic perspective. If it's shaping the world as we know it, you'll find it at ncregister.com.